May it please the court, my name is Steve Mullins. I represent the appellant in this case. I have additional authority to offer the court if the court desires. It's a decision issued by a separate panel of the court on November 8, 2012 in the case of Linda Silveria versus ICAO and Colorado Springs Health Partners and American Compensation Insurance Company. It deals with the same statute.
Have you shared that with opposing counsel? Mr. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. Mr. Fulano, do you have any objection to it?
I actually have a copy of it. It's an unpublished decision, Your Honor, so I'm not sure to what extent the court will allow reliance on this unpublished decision. I think it's well established you don't permit that sort of submission or cite.
We do on occasion read. We do on occasion read.
Go ahead, Mr. Fulano.
I'm not sure the relevance to the issue other than the question of attorney fees in an appeal, a workers' compensation appeal. Other than that, I'm not sure that's even relevant.
Mr. Mullins, since you have copies, if you want to give them to one of the bailiffs at the close of your argument, that would be fine. I know that you're aware, as Mr. Fulano said, of our policy that parties are not permitted to cite unpublished cases, but nevertheless will accept your presentation of those cases, that case for what it's worth. So you may continue.
Thank you. May it please the court, on September 14, 1989, while working as a groundskeeper at Coronado High School in Colorado Springs, Ron Martin, at age 19, suffered an injury to his right knee. As a result of the sprain to his knee, he was placed on medications called NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, and the one he was placed on is called Indocin. One of the dangers of NSAIDs is that it can produce a terrible GI response, and that's exactly what happened to Mr. Martin. Long story short, he went through six major surgeries, culminating in the complete removal of his large intestine. He is on a bag for the rest of his life with regard to bowel. The facts get worse. While he was hospitalized for treatment of the GI disease, he was given large quantities of steroid medication, which is the treatment of choice for the GI disease. As a result of the steroid medication, he developed aseptic necrosis of the femoral heads in both hips. He's now had two complete left hip replacements. He's had a major surgery on the right hip where they drilled into the joint to try and allow better blood flow, and he's been recommended for a complete right hip replacement. In 1997, Clement settled his case with Pinnacle Assurance. He settled his case and gave up the right to all workers' comp benefits, including permanent total disability, in order to hang on to his medical benefits. And in the settlement agreement that was written and was signed by the parties and approved by an administrative law judge on behalf of the director of the Division of Workers' Compensation, there are four paragraphs that are applicable to the events of this case and this appeal. Paragraph 4 identifies in the settlement agreement the results of the workers' compensation injury. And one of the conditions that's identified is the claimant's gastrointestinal tract disease. Another condition that is specifically identified in paragraph 4 are the injuries or disease to the claimant's bilateral hips. In paragraph 8 of the settlement agreement, it was recognized that medical benefits would remain open. And the only right reserved to Pinnacle was to challenge specific treatment or specific medical bills. In paragraph 18, and this is critical to this case, It is recognized by the parties that the diagnosis that the parties understood to be suffered by the claimant, Mr. Martin, were not to be relied upon by either party. In other words, as it says specifically in the agreement, the diagnosis may be incorrect, but the parties reached their agreement, made their peace, and agreed that Mr. Martin would have the benefit of medical care for his gastrointestinal disease, for his hips, for his other injury-related disease and injury problems for the rest of his life. There then occurred attempts by Pinnacle to settle the claim, as testified at hearing, followed by Mr. Martin's refusal to settle or give up his right to medical care. So that was followed by...
Say that again. There's another paragraph you're referring to?
No. I'm beyond the agreement now.
Okay.
I'm talking factual. I'm sorry, my bad.
And what did you say?
I said there was an effort to try and settle with the medical benefits with Mr. Martin. Mr. Martin would not settle, would not give up medical care.
With a gross payment of some sort.
That's right.
Okay.
I'm sorry. What followed was that Pinnacle retained the services of a forensic medical witness who wrote a report claiming that Mr. Martin did not suffer from ulcerative colitis, but rather that Mr. Martin suffered from Crohn's disease. There then followed the application for hearing that was filed on behalf of Pinnacle Assurance. And in response to that application, Mr. Martin requested attorney's fees and costs pursuant to statute for the endorsement of issues at time of application that were not right when the application was filed. It is Mr. Martin's position in this case that the settlement agreement would have to be reopened in order to discuss whether the GI disease was compensable or causally related to the work injury. Because in cases pursuant to statute, in cases where there's been a settlement in a workers' compensation claim and the claimant gives up the right to reopen, then the only grounds upon which the settlement agreement can be set aside is if it is proven that the settlement agreement occurred either as a result of fraud or as a result of mutual mistake of material facts.
How
about the enforcement of the settlement?
I'm sorry?
How about the enforcement of the settlement agreement?
I don't understand the question. I don't know, sir.
Well, you're saying the only way it can be set aside is through a certain procedure, but how about enforcing the terms of the settlement?
Either party has the right to go back and seek relief from an administrative object. Mr. Martin always had the right to seek an order compelling the provision of the medical care that Pinnacle agreed to provide.
And in this case, there's a provision in the settlement agreement that says nothing in the settlement shall be construed to be a waiver of respondent's right to contest any treatment or the payment of any bills.
But that's irrelevant to the facts of this case because there was no treatment at issue. There were no bills that were placed into contest. The issue that was raised by Pinnacle, if you take a look at the application for hearing, gave rise to the workers' compensation procedure was termination of medical benefits. There was no specific treatment identified as being in contest. There were no bills.
But it would be your position that even if there was a treatment in issue, in other words, the insurance company alleges it's not efficacious, it's experimental, or whatever. If there is a treatment or a bill in issue, they cannot challenge it based upon cost.
Oh, no. They can absolutely challenge. If there's a specific medical bill, for instance, if Mr. Martin said, I want Pinnacle to pay for my new glasses, and submitted the bill, and Pinnacle would say, no, we're paying for it.
No, you're missing my question.
Okay.
If it's treatment for the colon problem or the hip problem or related matters, Pinnacle cannot challenge that bill on the basis that it was not caused by the injury.
That's correct. They can challenge specific causal relation for a bill. I take that back. They can challenge specific causal relation for a proposed treatment. They always have that right.
Okay.
But that was never before the court in the workers' comp process. What Pinnacle was after is clear from the application.
So your glasses application is appropriate in what you're saying. They could challenge a causal relationship between the accident and his needing new glasses.
Well, if Mr. Martin could prove that as a result of medication taken for the GI distress that he had a problem with vision, it's far-fetched. But if he could, then he'd be entitled to the glasses. absent a demonstration of that causation. If there were a specific bill before the ALJ, then Pinnacle clearly would have the right to a contest and raise that issue. That's not what happened here. That never even became an issue before.
But the issue raised by the insurance company with respect to cause is a global issue.
It may be a global issue.
It says that we're not responsible for any of this.
It may be.
Because it was not caused by the accident.
But they've already contractually agreed to assume that responsibility.
I understand that.
Okay.
But isn't that what your objection is?
My objection is that under the Workers' Compensation Act and the law that's been announced by this court, primarily the Oliva Soto case, that there were not issues that were ripe at the time the application was filed. Had Pinnacle filed a petition to reopen the claim in order to discuss the issue of causation, then there may have been the potential of an argument. They never did that. I will go so far to suggest that had Pinnacle simultaneously filed a petition to reopen the case while raising an issue with regard to a particular treatment or causation in a global sense, the court could have considered both arguments, and under applicable law, one being contingent upon the other, there might have been the potential for those issues proceeding as being right, but that's not what happened. Pinnacle contractually obligated itself to provide this medical care for this young man for the rest of his life, in return for which he gave up all other benefits, and the contract could not be clearer.
Mr. Mullen?
Yes, sir.
The Industrial Claim Appeals Office ruled against your claim in part based upon the Hanna and Snyder cases, which say when there's a question of continued medical benefits, the issue of compensability is left open.
But when that issue of continued medical benefits in the context of those cases are not the result of a settlement for full and final settlement. As a general rule in workers' compensation, when a case is adjudicated as opposed to being settled, then either party has the right to go back to court on the issue of medical care that's going to be contested, requested, or denied. But in this case, where there is a settlement, then the statute that controls is absolutely clear. The case can only be reopened with regard to causation pursuant to 843-2041, as set forth in the brief. The case can only be reopened based on a showing of fraud or mutual mistake of material fact. That was never raised, that was never pled, that was never argued in this case.
So you're, in effect, saying that those two cases are distinguishable because of the presence of the settlement agreement here?
Yes, Your Honor, I am. And when a party such as Pinnacle Assurance assumes contractually the obligation to provide for specifically identified medical maladies or disease, such as this claimant's GI disease and his bilateral hip disease, that remains a burden upon that party absent reopening the case. And here there was never any effort to reopen. It was simply an effort to repudiate and collaterally attack the settlement agreement that was negotiated by the parties. I'd like to reserve time for rebuttal, and if I may, unless there are further questions.
Very well, Mr. Mullins.
Thank you.
You have about 2.5 minutes left.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, I'm Harvey Flewelling, registration number 22605, representing respondents, in El Paso County School District number 11 and Pinnacle Assurance. We're asking that you affirm the Industrial Claim Appeals Office decision in this case for basically the reasons stated in our brief. I do want to point out a typographical error I spotted when I was reviewing the file on page 13, the first full sentence of my brief. It should read, the fact that respondents subsequently withdrew the issue does not mean that it was not right when the application was filed. I think I was trying to avoid a double negative and left out a not on that part of my brief, and I think it's an important distinction.
What
are
you talking
about? Page 13, the first full sentence.
Okay.
Thank you. We appreciate your pointing out that correction. I don't know about my colleagues, but I know I have left out the word not on several occasions.
I left the word not out in a published case holding. Holding.
I've never left out the word
not. With regard to basically, we're relying on my brief with that amendment. But with regard to the argument that respondents agreed to pay any medical benefits in the settlement agreement, I think a plain reading of the settlement agreement does not obligate respondents to pay any medical benefits. It was about medical benefits remaining open and respondents retaining the right to contest any medical treatment or bills.
Right. Mr. Flewelling, let me pursue that if I might. Did you discuss in your brief paragraph 18 of the settlement?
I'm sure I did.
I don't recall that you did.
Okay.
If you could point that out.
Maybe the question is, what do you make of paragraph 18 in terms of your argument?
Well, let's read it. In making the settlement, the parties realize that the diagnosis or prognosis made by the physician in this matter may be incorrect or subject to change. None of the parties were relying upon representations made by any other party or physician or vocational expert as to the ability to put into work or any type of employment. None of the parties are relying upon any promise, guarantees, or predictions made by anyone as to claimant's physical or mental condition or as to any other aspect of these claims. Claimant agrees he will never be able to receive any additional money or benefits from respondents, even if this condition becomes worse, an unknown condition becomes an order, later feels a mistake or error, settling his claim. Claimant is agreeing to the settlement of his own free will without force, pressure, or coercion by anyone. There's nothing in here that says respondents agree to do anything or are obligated to do anything.
Well, what meaning do you attribute to the first sentence of that paragraph that says that the parties realize that the diagnoses or prognoses made by the physicians in this matter may be incorrect or subject to change? And the reason I ask that, of course, is because it appears that what the respondents are doing is saying that the diagnosis was incorrect.
This only pertains to if a party, either the claimant or respondent, wanted to reopen and say, I need additional permit. Because the diagnosis was wrong, or there's a mutual mistake here, I'd be entitled to reopen that, either to terminate benefits or maybe even ask for a repayment of benefits, or if it's in the claims situation, whether the claimant would want to reopen the claim in order to get additional indemnity benefits.
Is there anything in that paragraph or any other paragraph that says that it applies to motions or petitions to reopen the settlement as opposed to the motion that was filed here, which is to challenge the continuation of medical benefits?
No, the settlement agreement specifically says the claimant waives the right to reopen except in the case of mutual mistake or fact or fraud. So because you only have a reopening when an issue is closed, the only issues that could require a reopening was any issue that wasn't a medical benefit issue, because by the plain terms of the settlement agreement, medical benefits remained open. The caption of the document says this is a settlement of all claims except medical benefits.
Right, but I mean, you know far more about workers' compensation benefits than I do, but my impression has been that if you're challenging medical treatment, you would challenge for example, if a doctor diagnosed or prescribed medication A and the respondent thought that was unnecessary or too expensive, then you could challenge that as part of the medical benefits. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, in this case...
But that's not what you're doing here. The respondent is saying that the claimant was not suffering from gastrointestinal illnesses, but rather was suffering from Crohn's disease.
That's the medical report the respondents were relying on. That they weren't the respondents. They applied for hearing on that issue. It's acknowledged in claimant's opening brief that it was based on a doctor's report that opined that the claimant was suffering from Crohn's disease, a non-work-related condition.
But how does that deal with treatment? That's what I'm...
I'm sorry?
How does that diagnosis of Crohn's disease deal with the issue of medical benefits?
Well, the issue is raised in the application for hearing was what, was whether the treatment was related to Crohn's disease or was related to the GI, the gastrointestinal disease.
Let me ask you this. Why did you have this, why did you ask for this opinion?
Good question. I don't know.
Why did the insurance company seek an opinion about the underlying cause of the claimant's problems if it didn't intend to attack the settlement agreement in some fashion to set aside its obligation to pay the medical benefits related to the intestinal problem?
Well, my entire point here is we were not obligated by the settlement agreement to pay any medical benefits. The settlement agreement does not require response to pay any medical benefits. There's nothing in here that says that. So we weren't response. We're not attacking the settlement agreement because the settlement agreement left medical benefits open.
So now it's your position that you can challenge the causation of the problem, the fundamental causation of the claimant's problem, intestinal problem, in determining whether or not any future medical benefits will be paid with respect to it.
Exactly. You're correct, Your Honor. That's what the settlement agreement says, that medical benefits remain open. In case law, you know, claimants are arguing that if anything, response should reopen, but the case law is clear. Parties can enter into partial settlement agreements. That's what this is. It kept medical benefits open. And unless there's an issue that's specifically closed, the issues that are not specifically closed are still open.
But what benefits did Mr. Martin receive from the settlement aside from medical benefits?
Well, the settlement agreement acknowledges that the claimant is permanently totally disabled and has a 57% physical impairment rating, 100% permanent vocational impairment rating. And in exchange for entering the settlement agreement, respondents, paragraph 6 of the settlement agreement says, respondents shall not seek reimbursement for any permanent disability benefits previously paid to or on behalf of claimant. Respondents shall waive all advances or overpayments made to claimant except those resulting from fraud or except those provided for in the settlement.
So if I understand you correctly, you're saying that the claimant waived his right to obtain permanent and total disability benefits and yet entered into a settlement that would allow the respondents at any time to challenge the very basis for continued medical benefits.
Well, that's what the plain language of the settlement says, Your Honor. Paragraph 8. Nothing in the settlement shall be construed as to be a waiver of response right to contest any treatment or the payment of any medical bills.
But my question is, and I think you've answered it, is you think that the challenge can be made on the fact that he didn't have the infection in his urinary tract caused by the medication?
I'm sorry, I'm not.
You can challenge the fundamental basis of causation for the intestinal problem.
As it relates to medical benefits, Your Honor, that's the only thing this settlement agreement left open was we can challenge any medical benefit.
So he got nothing, basically.
I don't know, Your Honor.
Not a settlement agreement. I mean, that's sort of what I'm reading you just to say. He gives up what may have been, I don't know what they would have been, substantial permanent disability in exchange for the right to continue to litigate with you about whether he's entitled to benefits.
The record, I don't believe, shows how much the claimant was paid in permanent disability benefits or temporary disability benefits.
But assuming he has a lifetime, a normal lifetime, he gave up a lot.
Again, I don't know if he was paid the maximum allowable already, whether there was an overpayment.
Oh, I see.
Mr. Flewelling, as I understand your position, there's a difference between a problem that is work-related and a problem that now you've discovered is not work-related. In the latter instance, that is something that is not only left open by the settlement agreement, but is something that permits you to go in and say, we're not going to pay for this treatment. It's not work-related treatment.
I agree, Your Honor, or at least we could go to a hearing judge and ask a judge to decide whether or not we're still liable for this treatment based on this new information we obtained.
And that certainly is ripe for purposes of assessing attorney's fees.
No question, Your Honor. I think that's all I have, Your Honor. Your Honors.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Fulvelli.
I'd like to start, if I could, with the last comment. The fact of the matter is that there was no challenge to any treatment in this case. The challenge or the issue that was raised was the termination of all medical care. That was the issue identified in the application for hearing.
What's the difference?
The difference may be that a physician may recommend treatment for GI disease that is not considered to be mainstream. A physician may recommend treatment that's not contained in the regulations promulgated by the director with regard to the treatment regulations. A physician may recommend something that is considered to be new, not proven, or not accepted medicine.
What about treatment for something that is not work-related?
If it's clearly not related to the injury, as I discussed about the glasses, they have the right to come in and say, we're not paying for this. We signed up to pay for his GI disease.
Well, and they also have a right, under the plain language of the settlement agreement, to object to treatment or benefits.
But they never did. They asked that the benefits be terminated. They didn't object to any treatment. They didn't object to any bill. They didn't identify any specific issue that would render that issue a contest for purposes of listing a ripe issue.
I think our questions have gone perhaps beyond the issue. You're here on a very narrow issue.
We are.
And that is attorney's fees and whether the issue was ripe at the time it was raised, not the ability of the carrier, although this may come up at some later date, to challenge the treatment based upon the fact on this doctor's approval.
I don't think that they're ever going to have the right to go to court and challenge unless a specific treatment is identified that the claimant is requesting and Pinnacle denies, making it an issue that's joined in a real controversy, just like the Oliva Soto case.
But that'll be the next treatment he gets if they're going to challenge the underlying cause.
I don't think there's a chance of that. They withdrew their issue of terminating benefits, and they withdrew all of their medical issues as soon as I entered my appearance. So the issue that you raised about pressure to settle instead of rendering this an illusory agreement disappeared immediately. And Pinnacle has never to this day filed an application challenging anything about the claimant's ongoing medical care for his GI disease.
Okay.
The other point I wanted to make, if I could.
I think your time is up.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah. 3 seconds.
Thank you, Mr. Mons. Thank you, Mr. Fulvelli. We appreciate both of your arguments this afternoon. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.